Ed Robertson, welcoming you back to TV Confidential, radio talk show about television. We'll play part two of a conversation that began last week with Robert Crane. Robert Crane, eldest son of Hogan serial star Bob Crane, and an accomplished author, journalist, and film historian in his own right. Robert Crane, co-author along with Christopher Fryer of Jack Nicholson, the early years, Bruce Dern, Things I've Said, Probably Shouldn't Have, SCTV, Behind the Scenes, with Bob co-wrote with Dave Thomas, and many other books. Bob's latest book, My Un-Hollywood Family, provides a fresh look at his relationship with his famous dad, Hogan serial star Bob Crane, and the lifelong impact that his father had on him, his mom, and his siblings. It is also a book about surviving a dysfunctional marriage, navigating relationships with his step-parents after his mom and dad divorced and remarried, and the sadness of seeing his father change during his second marriage and not for the better. My Un-Hollywood Family, available wherever books are sold through Oregon Greystone Press. Before we forget, because we brought up Rod Serling a couple times. I've said this on the air. I think I may have said this to you on the air once or twice. This is one of the great dichotomies that makes people people. Rod Serling loved your dad. Loved being on his show, loved talking to your dad, liked him as a person. He hated Hogan's Heroes with a passion. Yeah. And I can understand why, because Rod Serling was a veteran. Rod Serling had seen the horrors of World War II firsthand.
Yeah.
And unlike some of the other cast members, like Werner Klemperer, like Robert Clary, who also lived through that, but were able to use the characters they play as sort of a cathartic release. Werner Klemperer, you know, this very family says, I have no problem playing Clink as long as he's written to be incompetent.
Right. Exactly.
You know, Rod Serling can never quite wrap his head around the concept.
Yeah.
So, but he did not let the fact that he hated Hogan's Heroes, he did not let that affect his relationship with your dad.
Right. Yeah. They had a great relationship. And again, what you touched upon, the producers, many of the writers, directors, and much of the cast were Jewish. And Robert Clary, who you mentioned, actually was in a concentration camp and had the tattooed numbers on his arm. But there are two things. Hopefully I'll remember both things. One is Hogan's Heroes was a prisoner of war camp in Germany. And they were on a mission. Hogan and his guys were on a mission to blow up things, to steal things, to capture people. They had a base in a prisoner of war camp. It was not a concentration camp. And now I've forgotten the second point, but I'm sure it was brilliant. So people got that confused. I went to school with a woman named Karen, who everybody was in love with. She was bright. She was the yell leader. She was this. She was that. She was Jewish. And her parents, a lot of my friends got the word from their parents, absolutely hated Hogan's, which tainted my relationship with her because of the funny Nazi, as Chris Fryer says, the funny Nazis. But what you said, you always make them look stupid, ridiculous, every episode. You never hailed them. You never applauded them. They were the buffoons. And it was also during a era, Hogan's was 65 to 71. 1968, Mel Brooks, the producers. Springtime for Hitler, for God's sake. Mel Brooks, Jewish. Come on. This was cathartic.
Yeah.
It was 20 years after World War II and the horrors of World War II and the Holocaust and all of that. And this was trying to just explode it. Mel Brooks did it. Hogan's, I felt, did it. No, we're not applauding and hailing funny Nazis. We're making them look like idiots. And that was the cathartic effect, I thought, of that show.
Yeah, and I think the fact that it still connects with people today is it's funny. Yeah. Funny is funny, and your dad was the straw that stirred the drink, but he was also surrounded by other, you know, good actors and other funny actors, and that's what makes the show continue work.
Many were better actors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Werner Klemper was, you know, a trained actor.
Yeah.
You know, my dad, he did go to Stella Adler classes and things like that, but he had no training like Werner, who was serious. So, this was, again, the fork in the road. Either you follow, you know, and that's what documentaries are for. They're going to tell you about World War II and blah, blah, blah. Or you take the other road and say, and show that the Allied soldiers were smarter and braver and better than the Nazis, and that's why we won World War II, and they didn't, and let's celebrate it. That's what that was all about. But I do understand, on the other hand, where many of my Jewish friends, forget the concentration camp versus prisoner of war camp. It was just the idea of funny Nazis with the swastika on their arms that they could never get past.
Yeah, but he was also doing, it was also Bilko,
mm-hmm,
tailored for your dad. In a lot of ways, what he was doing with Hogan's was sort of a precursor to the early years of MASH, the television series, which is also rooted in the anarchy behind the scenes that's spoofing the hypocrisy of the brass.
I think MASH got all the awards because they were anti-war,
mm-hmm,
and it was also during Vietnam.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not taking anything away from the great writing and acting and directing and production of that show, and they won tons of Emmys, as they should have. But Hogan's was more of the, even though it was, to me, a pretty untraditional show, it was more along the lines of a kind of a regular TV show as opposed to anti-war. And also, Hogan's was coming after, let's not forget, Great Escape,
mm-hmm,
Steve McQueen, James Garner. A great movie. Watch it every time it's on TV. I have to watch it. And Von Ryan's Express, another prisoner of war camp with Frank Sinatra. So those were right before Hogan's. So it was that whole 60s, you're kind of bloodletting,
mm-hmm,
because it's only 20 years, which is unbelievable. Only 20 years since the end of World War II.
Yeah.
And you're making movies and TV shows about World War II. It was like, whoa.
My Un-Hollywood Family by Robert Crane is available wherever books are sold through Oregon Greystone Press. My Un-Hollywood Family provides a fresh look at Bob's relationship with his famous dad, Hogan serial star Bob Crane, and the lifelong impact that his dad had and continues to have on him, his mom, and his siblings. By Un-Hollywood Family, available wherever books are sold through Oregon Greystone Press. Going to jump around a little bit. Your dad was the driver of his car. He was forward-thinking, but he was also, at least in the KNX Hogan's Heroes portion of his life, he was forward-thinking, and yet he was sort of forward-thinking within a certain box. There's a wonderful story in the book. I think he's still at KNX at the time, but you're old enough that he could take you to work.
Yeah.
Because he was working for the Columbia Broadcast System,
right,
he had pass keys to Columbia Records,
yep,
and all things CBS at the time. And there's a you and he are walking past a recording studio, and you being a teenage kid, you recognize the birds,
yes,
are recording.
Oh, my God.
And it was lost on him.
Yeah.
Because your father was still, I mean, his taste in music were, you know, the big band era, you know, Bix Beiderbecke.
Glenn Miller.
Yeah.
Tommy Dorsey. Yeah.
And so he was forward-thinking, but he was very finite in that respect, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So as you said, he has a key to the building. This is at Gower and Sunset, mm-hmm, in Hollywood, for anybody who knows L.A. And five long-haired guys. Now, this is 19, 65.
Yeah.
Five long-haired guys can't get in. They're standing outside the door. I'm walking up with my dad. I'm checking out these guys. My dad opens the door for them, lets them in. I am speechless. I can't. Finally, Dad, do you know who those guys were? No. The Birds. Yeah. You know, nothing. If that had been Buddy Rich,
yeah,
or Gene Krupa or somebody like that, that would have been a big deal.
Yeah.
The Birds, my God, coming out, my Tambourine Man.
Yeah.
And they're huge. They're big.
They
David Crosby, part of it.
I'm trying to think. Did they do a Smothers Brothers or maybe? I think they probably would have.
Yeah. My dad did a Smothers Brothers.
Yeah.
With, and this is Smothers Brothers circa 1967.
Okay.
Other guest on the show, Betty Davis. Betty Davis on the Smothers Brothers show. Musical guest, thank you very much, Buffalo Springfield. Oh, my God.
That was the beauty of the Smothers Brothers show, because they would get old school guests like Betty Davis or George Burns or Jack Benny, which would appease the Mike Danz, the programming people, yeah, at the network.
Yeah.
While again, this show's this is the genius of Tommy Smothers.
Yeah.
Tommy Smothers and Dick would be the first to say this. Tommy Smothers was the driver of the Smothers Brothers act in, yeah, many respects.
Wow.
He would the fact that they would they would get enough guests to appease these the sponsors, the programming people. That allowed, Tommy took advantage of that so he can get contemporary guests,
yeah,
contemporary music guests,
right,
on the show.
Yeah.
And that enabled him to do the sort of things that he wanted to do,
yeah,
and eventually, make statements and all that stuff.
Yeah. So it would have been the same situation for my dad. He, you rehearse during the week, you shoot the show one night in front of a live audience. I'm sure Buffalo Springfield meant nothing to him. I had to go when I heard this. I went with my mom, CBS Television City in Hollywood. My mom and I sat in the audience, and I'm feet away from Neil Young, Stephen Stills, Buffalo Springfield, and not taking anything away from my dad and Betty Davis and the Smothers Brothers,
yeah,
but that's why I'm there.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. And then afterward, we all meet backstage, and Dewey Martin, the late Dewey Martin, drummer of Buffalo Springfield, is checking out my mom. He's kind of cozied up to her.
Yeah.
He's saying a few words to her. And my mom, of course, doesn't know who the Buffalo Springfield is either. And I'm dying. I'm just like, I can't believe this.
Apparently, Burt Reynolds cozy up your mom. I did not know that.
Why, yes, he did. He did. This is
Dan August Burt Reynolds.
Dan August Burt Reynolds. This is after my parents have divorced. My mother's best friend, who is also from Connecticut, Rose, says, let's go on a cruise. Okay. Let's go. Let's go have fun. Rose takes my mom on a cruise. It happens to be ABC's fall lineup. Junket.
Yeah.
Junket. On a cruise. Well, Burt Reynolds is there promoting Dan August. And he looks at my mom, who's a older blonde. And he says, can I call you sometime? Sure. At college or, yeah, something. I don't know. But I wasn't there. My sisters met him. And he would be shooting Dan August in Oxnard or Camarillo,
yeah,
or up the coast,
yeah,
from L.A. And on his way home to Hollywood, would stop by our house in unfashionable Tarzana, pick up my mom, take her out to dinner, at the local steakhouse, while my grandmother is babysitting my sisters, and I'm off somewhere, college or something. And that lasted a couple of times. It's very un-Hollywood.
Yeah.
Very un-Hollywood. And, he, of course, he became involved with, you know, Sally Field and then Dinah Shore. Talk about an older blonde, the Dinah Shore relationship.
Well, no, the fact that he was attracted to older women before he met Dinah Shore. I never quite figured out the Dinah Shore thing. But reading that he had seen, he was interested in your mom, you know, at least a few times to go out with her, you know.
Right.
That shows that, okay, that was a thing for him, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it's interesting. Now, I knew that he was very committed to. I mean, he threw himself into the promotion of Dan August. I mean,
right.
He did any opportunity on weekends or whatever to promote the show. He would go to the affiliate stations or whatever,
right.
And he would do that. I didn't realize he even committed himself to being on a cruise. You know,
yeah,
because it's like you fly to Minneapolis, you're in and you're out, and at least you have a semblance of a weekend to yourself.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with cruises, you know, but it's like you're pretty much stuck there for the duration of the
tour. Yeah.
The thing. You
know? Now, this might have been, to me, this sounds like a 3-day thing,
okay.
Probably. It was probably, you know, leaving out of San Pedro, California, and going down to Puerto Vallarta or something, and then turning around and coming back. So it was not a 7 or 14
not,
day.
Yeah, okay, not a long cruise.
No,
like
no.
A weekend. Okay, like
no.
A weekend type of cruise.
Yeah,
okay.
But you're right. Yeah, he committed to it. Good old mom and her friend Rose just happened to be there, and it was a relationship that lasted, I think, 2 or 3 dates, including Monty's Steakhouse, the late Monty's Steakhouse in Encino. That was a scene of a dinner. And, of course, Bert, like my dad, you know, those eyes are always moving.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there with my mom, who was a pretty blonde, but he's scoping a room,
yeah.
Too. You know, my mom saw this and knew it. And that's why it never got
yeah,
serious.
Not, yeah, for both of them, usually it takes a couple of dates before you figure out, okay, maybe is this going to go anywhere,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So the other, Burt Reynolds is one of the few proper nouns you use
yeah.
In the book. I want to circle back to something I mentioned a little earlier. I love reading my un-Hollywood family for much the same reason as I liked Barbara Feldon's first book. I don't know if you ever. I mean, I know Barbara Feldon did Smile with Bruce Dern. I don't know if you ever
right.
Crossed paths with her, but
no, I haven't.
Years ago, she wrote a book. She's written two memoirs. First one came out about 10 or 12 years ago. It's called Living Alone and Loving It. And she writes about being by herself for the first time after being married for 5 or 10 years and then in a long-term relationship for another 5 years. It was the first time in her adult life that she lived by herself.
Yeah.
And she mentions enough things about her professional life as far as time and places is concerned, but for the most part, she tells the story she wants to tell without dropping a lot of names unnecessarily. That you do the same thing in My Un-Hollywood Family. You assume that the reader knows enough about the backstory that they're able to follow along, with the occasional exception of mentioning Burt Reynolds as an example by name.
Right. Well, in the original manuscript, I had no names. And Teresa Griffin Kennedy, the editor of the book, said, you got to have some names in here. I mean, you can't just go through it.
Robert Crane's latest book, My Un-Hollywood Family, is available wherever books are sold through Oregon Greystone Press. You can also find it at Amazon.com where books are sold online. We'll talk some more with Bob. We come back here on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide. including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries. Ed Robertson, author, guest Robert Crane. Robert Crane, eldest son of Hogan's Hero star Bob Crane, and the author or co-author of about a dozen books in his own right. Bob's latest book, My Un-Hollywood Family, provides a fresh look at his relationship with his famous dad and the lifelong impact that his dad continues to have on him, his mom, and his siblings. It is also a uniquely American story that is relatable to anyone who has survived growing up in a dysfunctional household, growing up with the divorce of their parents, or who has experienced any sort of narcissistic relationship, either at work or at home. My Un-Hollywood Family, available wherever books are sold through Oregon Greystone Press. You can also find it Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. I want to go back to your stepdad, Chuck, who, as you mentioned earlier, was in many respects the impetus for you writing My Un-Hollywood Family. When he passed a couple of years ago, that's when you started to think about things. I don't know whether you've asked this, or whether I've asked you this question before, but at one point in the book, you write about when you first dropped your guard with Chuck. And you realize that in his own way, besides taking care of your mom and making your mom happy, he shared one trait with your dad, in that he had a facility for getting people to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, your father was a professional interviewer. Your stepfather was not a professional interviewer, but he knew how to get people to talk.
Yes.
And now he worked in he was a realtor.
Yeah.
So that's just good customer skills anyway. But yep. he knew how to do that. And I didn't put this together until I read that section last night, but not long after you dropped your guard about Chuck and came to realize Chuck is an okay guy.
Yeah.
And it's okay for me to have a relationship with this guy.
Yeah.
Not long after that, you started branching into becoming, I mean, not long after that, you sold your first interview for either We or Playboy or one of the publications. And you yourself became a skilled interviewer. I'm wondering whether you learned any of that from Chuck.
I did. I will compliment you right now. You make the interviewee relaxed, comfortable. You can say anything. I watched Chuck, who had a background in sales and real estate, only child. I watched him get information out of people quickly. I mean, not days or hours. I mean, within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You've learned a lot about this person that Chuck's talking. And that's because Chuck, who's absolutely sincere, and also possessed one of the great smiles in the world, could just walk in a room, smile, shake hands with you, and 5 minutes later, you felt like you were his best friend. And I don't mean this superficially or phony or anything. And that's how we built relationships with people as well. But I was also fascinated by, getting back to what you said, getting info from someone. Meaning you know, something about a piece of property or a building or, you know, something in real estate, but he's getting stuff out of it, you know, or what, how much are the taxes or something like that, all very sincerely and gaining this info pretty quickly. So I learned a lot about making the person comfortable that you're talking to, mm-hmm. interviewing, whatever, because that's the main thing. Otherwise, they're going to be uptight. They're not going to open up the floodgates and let the info out. So that my dad would walk into a room, and because he was a quote-unquote celeb, people would feel like they knew him. And he wouldn't have to say much and didn't spend a lot of time on being your best friend. Chuck, who was not known, would go into the room and you would be best friends with him, you know, 30 minutes later. And that's a skill.
It is a skill, and it's a skill that has served you well throughout your entire professional career, which includes many print interviews. Bob also hosted a radio show of his own.
Very briefly. You know, thank you. I canceled myself.
Well, but you also drove your own car, in that it was a situation where to do the show you had to secure your own sponsorship, and you did. And
for a brief period of time.
Well, no, you did it.
Yeah.
You did it.
Yeah.
You did it, and it. This is a mantra I've developed over the years. A successful person anticipates a positive outcome until there's reason to believe otherwise.
I like that. Very good.
And we all, whether it's a personal relationship, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a professional relationship, whether it's a book collaboration experience, as you and Chris Fryer have had for many, many years, you enter the relationship assuming it's going to succeed. And if you run into stormy weathers, you try to navigate those weathers with the hope that you will come out of it on the other side. And sometimes you're able to navigate that, and sometimes you're not.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that the relationship was not successful. It's just it wasn't meant to last 9 years like your dad's show did.
Yeah. Everything is a finite number to it, you know. In the case of his radio show in Los Angeles, it had a finite number because he found out after 9 years he couldn't do both radio and TV. He had to make a decision.
Yeah, and had Hogan's not taken off, he likely would have continued the show.
Yeah, and he did go back and he did a couple of specials for their competitors, KMPC,
mm-hmm.
at the time, just to do it, just because he had a blast doing it.
And in many respects, he created a form of radio that, a sort of free-form radio that, I was going to say Howard Stern, I mean, your father did not do the type of show Howard Stern did, but... Howard Stern did the type of show your dad did, in that it was free form, it was unedited, it was unscripted in every sense of the word. I mean, there's certain trappings within commercial radio that you have to adhere to.
Right.
But other than, you know, hard breaks every 15 minutes, I mean, he never knew what was going to come out of his mouth from the minute he signed on at 5 after 6 until he signed off at 10 to 10. So.
Yeah. But... one of the things I notice in Howard Stern is he makes the interviewee comfortable.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
He makes them relaxed, comfortable. They trust him, so he gets great information out of them. And that's a skill, and mm-hmm. Howard Stern has it.
I want to circle back to one other thing. And again, this goes back to... your father was forward-thinking, but only only within a certain box, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this is your first professional sale, but this is the first professional sale you write about in My Un-Hollywood Family, Bob. But you had pitched an interview with your dad. This is going back to your efforts. Your dad had reached the point. Okay, he was open to maybe doing some of his own, having someone else help him with his own publicity.
Right.
And so you're 24, 25 years old. You're starting off your career. You're making some inroads. And okay, maybe if I do a Q&A with you, I might be able to get, you know, Playboy or We or someone else to publish it. You know? And this happens, you know, you pitch the idea to the editor, and you have to come up with a couple of names in case the editor says no.
Right.
Your editor said no to the interview with your dad, but he said yes to Bruce Dern. And your father's reaction was priceless. He said, "Who's Bruce Dern?" And that speaks to your father was sort of he was in terms of pop culture.
Yeah.
He was very limited.
Yes.
He was stuck in a certain era.
Yeah. And this was a guy who read all the periodicals.
Yeah.
He would read the LA Times. He would read Variety, Hollywood Reporter, you know, Billboard, all this stuff about the business because he's having guests on all the time that are in those areas. But he still doesn't know who's serious. You know, when Chris and I did the Jack Nicholson book, he looked at it like, who's this? And he had seen, what had he seen? He probably saw Carnal Knowledge, and that was it. He didn't know Jack Nicholson from, you know. And this is it's also a different age category, which really shouldn't mean anything. But my dad is Jack Lemmon, Gig Young, that's his era. Rock Hudson, Tony Randall, that's his era. It's not Jack Nicholson, Bruce Dern, Harry Dean Stanton.
He was not hip to the counterculture.
No, not at all.
So I take it he did not see the Cowboys.
I doubt he saw the Cowboys.
Okay, well, if he saw the Cowboys, he'd know who Bruce Dern was.
Yeah. I mean, he knew who John Wayne was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think he saw the Cowboys.
One difference between my un-Hollywood family and your first book about growing up with your dad, a Crane Sex Celebrity and My Father's Unsolved Murder, Bob, is you talk about closure.
Right.
You talk about closure in my un-Hollywood family.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about this before we started recording. You're not crazy about the use of you're not crazy about the term closure. You say that's a newsroom item. That's a newsroom term. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, you see, and this is towards the end of the book too. I touch on this because I just to go back a little bit. Murder happened to our family.
Mm-hmm.
This was not something that we even thought about, or it was always someone else. While I'm growing up, I'm watching Vietnam every night on Walter Cronkite in the news. Someone is dying in Vietnam, some 18-year-old soldier. Not me, not our family. So
it was removed. It was removed.
Yeah, you know, JFK assassination. That's someone else. Mrs. Kennedy wearing the blood-stained dress every day. As horrible as this is, it's someone else, not us. Finally happens to us, our family. The last person I thought in the world that would ever get into trouble is my dad. Murder. Now, goes to just about every day. Now, you watch the local news. No, it can be network too, but I'm thinking local news. Because they have their 60 to 90 second piece that they have to do. And it's about little Johnny who was absconded by an ex-boyfriend and winds up dead. It's about the woman who was crossing the street and gets hit by a Prius going 85 miles an hour. It's the firefighter who fell into the burning building. It, now they cut to the fence with the balloons, the teddy bears, the candles, the flowers, and they got to wrap up this 90-second piece with something. So it's always all of the candles and the teddy bears are helping the family with closure. And every time I hear the word closure, I cringe. I cringe while I just said it. Because you need the bow on the little 90-second package. Oh, it's all going to be okay because the candles and the balloons and the folded American flag given to the wife of the soldier who just died. It's all going to be okay now. No, it's not. No, it's not. My father was murdered in 1978, and it's still not okay. It's not okay. And I've looked up the a couple of definitions of closure, and part of that is to, you know, put all of this behind you, and you've come to a conclusion of sorts that this act is finished, done with, and now you can put it away in your a little box somewhere or in the closet. You can't, because it's in your brain.
Yeah. No. When you describe it like that, I agree with you in that respect. You your sisters, your mom can never, ever, anyone who has survived, lived through, experienced the murder of a loved one.
Yeah.
Can never have closure.
No.
Because going back to one of the metaphors we used earlier, your dad was turning a corner in his life when he was cut off and denied the opportunity to complete that turn.
Right.
And so when you have someone take his life away from him and by extension suddenly cut off his life from you and your sisters Karen and Debbie and your mom Anne, you know, that is something there's no way you can ever resolve that.
Right.
It's called My Un-Hollywood Family by Robert Crane. It's available wherever books are sold through Oregon Greystone Press. You can also find it at Amazon.com where books are sold online. Robert Crane, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to our next conversation.
Ed, thank you as always. Great talking with you.
We'll play more of our conversation with David Koenig, author of Unshot Columbo. We go back on TV Confidential.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life. But it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. They're a community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tech
ConnectLaw offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com. Rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Now you can get generic Viagra shipped to your door for about $2 a pill. Get the same impact for less. Call Steel Man Pills now and get the same blue pill for about $2 a pill. Call now for the 50-pill special and save even more. Plus, get a free bonus.
800-932-2613. 800-932-2613. That's 800-932-2613.
Ed Roberts with a reminder that the next edition of TV Confidential will premiere next week on the station at the usual time. Please join us as we welcome back Emmy Award-winning writer-producer Joseph Doherty. Joe will help us celebrate the 100th birthday of Rod Serling. We hope you join us for that. In the meantime, we'll round out this week's program by playing our remaining moments with David Koenig. David Koenig's latest book, Unshot Columbo, Cracking the Cases That Never Got Filmed, is a deep dive into 19 Columbo mysteries that were written for either the NBC series or the ABC series, but which never went into production for one reason or another. Unshot Columbo, like David's previous book, Shooting Columbo, both available from our friends at Bonaventure Press, bonaventurepress.com. You can also find it Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, other online retailers. You mentioned that the episode that became Old Fashioned Murder, that is an exception to the rule in that you included an unshot Columbo, even though it ultimately was shot, but it was not shot the way it was intended. There's another exception in your book, and it speaks to an episode that was conceived by our mutual friend Paul Robert Coyle that would have broken ground in another way that Columbo had never developed before. As I understand, Paul wrote it with James Earl Jones in mind, and I bring it up because we happen to be recording our conversation with David within a few days of the passing of James Earl Jones.
Oh, right, correct. Yeah, that was a very interesting and well-written episode as well, in which James Earl Jones was supposed to play a famous movie critic. It was called Critic's Choice Murder, and never before, and as it turned out, never to be, would there be an African-American murderer on Columbo. Peter Falk, again, was very, he fought to have some, like, black actors appear in minor roles during the 70s and then in more major roles and including as, his number one deputy in later years, but thought it might be bad if he depicted a black murderer. So I don't know officially, but that may have had a little bit to do with that one not being made, but it was a very clever mystery, and it also was neat in that, like some of the other later episodes, it had sort of callbacks to other earlier episodes. So longtime fans of the show watching it in the early 90s could maybe be reminded of a special moment from 20 years before, such as in this episode, he had his killer murdering someone near a projection booth in a way set up similar to how Robert Culp would do in Double Exposure 20 years before this.
Yeah, and I realize I'm being a little wonky here, but another reason why Paul's script is sort of an exception to the rule is that, and you correct me if I get the details wrong, it came as close to going into production as it possibly could, but it never actually went into production for reasons that you explain in your book.
Yeah, it came close, but I don't have a Hollywood tape measure, so I can't. It's the closest one that ever came, but like most of them in the book, there's some that didn't get very far, but quite a few of them in the book did come like just 11th hour type thing to where there was a production number assigned to where there, you know, it was all budgeted out and ready to go, especially the Brian De Palma script. That was, you know, that was basically good to go. It was slotted into a production time, and it was going to be like the third show of the third or fourth show of the third season, and they were all ready to go. And just at the 11th hour, Peter Falk was, you know, it would shock Dean Hargrove because up to that time, Peter rarely read the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until later that was about the turning point for him, and I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but it was right about the middle of the third season where he just started paying more attention to that. And so they were, you know, stunned. You know, wait, you read the script? And they were sort of, you know, that was the biggest surprise to them. Not that he was killing it, the story, but that he even knew what it was. His method for working was not reading the scripts, showing up at the set, you know, looking over the few pages that were supposed to be shot, and then going on the set and just sort of working it out in the general idea of what the words would be. And he'd rehearse, and then he'd shoot take after take after take, trying out different ways to pronounce every word, rephrasing it and how he, quote, thought Columbo would really say it. And, you know, until he was happy and thought, okay, that felt like the most authentic take. So it was very surprising to them when he, you know, about 1973, when Peter Falk learned to read.
The other interesting aspect is, and again, this is a tease because I want people to pick up a copy of the book and find out exactly who we're talking about. But while we're still on the subject of Brian De Palma, apparently there was another A-list motion picture director who maybe would have directed that film, which had it gone into production, which would have been a whole other chapter in the life of Columbo. But you have to pick up a copy of Unshot Columbo to find out exactly who we're talking about. Unshot Columbo, Cracking the Cases That Never Got Filmed by David Koenig, available Bonaventure Press. You can also find it at Amazon.com, where the books are sold online. We're going to jump ahead a little bit. There were 69 episodes of Columbo, 69 Columbo cases filmed, either as the NBC series, the ABC series, or as the occasional series of 2-hour specials, which was the case of Columbo throughout the 90s. There was one episode that Falk really, really wanted to make towards the end. It involved a celebrity author who uses technology to murder someone over the telephone while she's appearing on Larry King.
Yeah, it was originally written in the late 90s. Called Hear No Evil, and it was, in my opinion, the best Columbo script I've ever read. I mean, it's just sensational. It's just the dialogue, the pacing, the uniqueness of the scenes, and it was this neat combination between elements that were totally unique and clever, like the way the murder was committed, that I'd never seen or heard of before associated with Columbo, while at the same time there were a lot of moments that were sort of reminders or callbacks to things that had happened during the 70s run, things where you'd watch and you'd go, oh yeah, that reminds me of, you know, that scene from the Leonard Nimoy episode or what have you. And it was just this tremendous episode. It was all lined up. They set it to you know, production number, production time. They were going to lure Bill Link back out of retirement to come and work on one more Columbo. And they had actually got an agreement from Candace Bergen, who just wrapped up the series Murphy Brown,
mm-hmm.
so she was available and a real big name, to play the villain. And so a gigantic coup, and they were all ready to roll, except Peter didn't want Candace Bergen to be the star. He wanted his wife, Shara Denisi, to have that role. And ABC was, we've got Candace Bergen here.
Yeah.
One of the biggest stars there are. She's a sensational actress. She's never done anything like this before. And your wife's, you know, fine, but, you know, and so they, neither side would budge. So they just kept delaying this episode over and over and over again. They finally made another episode instead, based on rock music that had nothing to do with them. And then Peter Falk decided, you know what, I'm getting up there. I know I can't do many more. I want to do one more, but I want to do that last episode, but I want to rewrite it myself as Columbo's Last Case. And it was a perfect choice because it had all those callbacks. And it also, it was about an author who kept encouraging Columbo to write his own life story and asking about his life story. So it would have been a perfect way to reminisce about the series and to wrap it up perfectly. You know, unfortunately, by that time, you know, Peter was into his 80s. Dementia may have been not far away, and it just unfortunately never got made, which is such a sad thing.
Yeah, and when I read the backstory of that episode, unshot Columbo, cracking the cases that never got filmed, and Shooting Columbo, The Lives and Deaths of TV's Rumpel Detective, both books by David Koenig, available BonaventurePress.com as well as Amazon.com, BarnesNoble.com, wherever books are sold online. Also a reminder that my Un-Hollywood Family by Robert Crane, available Oregon Greystone Press as well as Amazon.com. Ed Roberts, Tony Figueroa, Donna Allen, Phil Grace, Greg Garibar, and Susan Silver, thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. They're a community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tech Conic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com. Rock solid.
I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. Happy holidays. During this time, it's important to salute our military personnel, domestically and abroad, who work to keep our country safe. It's during the holidays that warm, happy feeling of being together with family that we sometimes take for granted how much we have to be thankful for. So we want to make sure that we let the families and those who serve know that we appreciate their service above self during the holidays.
Join Tolkien's Radio Show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Tolkien's Radio Show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.